You're listening to the Full and Thriving Podcast, a place where courageous women come to break free from food obsession, heal their relationship with their body, and strive to live a life that's present, lighthearted, and meaningful. If you're listening, my wish is that this podcast serves as a catalyst that inspires you to nourish your body, nurture your mind, and energize your spirit. I'm your host, Meg McCabe, a certified life coach and eating disorder recovery coach with a PhD in having a good time. Just kidding about that last part. Anyway, thank you so much for listening and enjoy the show. Today's guest is Merit Elizabeth. Merit is a CCI certified eating disorder recovery coach with a master's in health promotion. In this episode, Merit and I discuss bulimia, which is a lesser talked about diagnosis in the eating disorder recovery space that we both have lived experience with. Together, we explore what bulimia is, how it impacts the body, and how to start healing from your own bulimia. I hope this episode reminds you that if you're living with bulimia, you are not alone. Please enjoy this episode of the show. Hello, hello, Merit. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Meg. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so happy you're back.
I'm back.
How have you been since the last time we chatted?
I've been great. It's been a busy summer. You know, usually I think things are supposed to like slow down during the summer, but that has not been the case at all. So I've been busy. I've been traveling. We've been doing great work with clients. So yeah, it's been busy, but awesome.
Amazing. Where have you traveled this summer? Just quick question.
Yeah. Okay. So we went to Sedona, Arizona for the very first time. And I'd never been there. So it was beautiful. Such a cool place. We did like a Jeep tour. We went on ATVs. It was really fun. Definitely an adventure.
I'm so curious about that place. I've never been. I really want to go. I've been thinking about bachelorette party ideas.
That's a great one.
Sedona as an idea because I've never been. It's very nature-y. There might be some cool things to do, but that's like the very initial stages of ideas. I have not decided on that.
And it's very spiritual too. So we could do like a group meditation together. Yes. That would be fun.
That's what I'm thinking, something really different, because we're not like trying to party and like do all that stuff. Like maybe, I don't know. We're kind of all a little older and like want to relax. So
yeah, you're on a different vibe now. You're ready for relaxation.
Yeah, ready for
I'm on the same page.
Exactly. So I'm super excited about this conversation today because we're talking about a subject that actually impacted my life when I had an eating disorder. And I think it's something that's not spoken about enough in this space because there's so much shame and secrecy around it. And that's bulimia. And I feel like, you know, you recently launched your Conquering Bulimia course. So I figured you'd be the perfect person to talk about bulimia with. So let's just dive right in.
All right. I'm ready.
Woohoo. Okay. So could you briefly explain what bulimia is to people who might not know?
Mm-hmm. So I want to give the definition from Johns Hopkins Medicine because I think it's important to have proper definition so we know exactly what we're dealing with here. And bulimia is characterized by uncontrolled episodes of binging, and this is followed by purging. And this can be methods such as vomiting, misuse of laxatives, and this is where the binge-purge cycle comes in, right? And so there are two ways people with bulimia restrict calories. So it's the purging type, which is, like we said, self-induced vomiting, misuse of laxatives, diuretics, etc., and the non-purging types. And this is using other behaviors like fasting or excessive exercise rather than purging behaviors.
Okay.
So bulimia is, there's two ways that people restrict their calories, right? Like it's either the purging type, which is vomiting, which we all think of what bulimia is. But there's also the non-purging type where someone, you know, restricts through, after they binge, they restrict through fasting or like excessive exercise. And a second definition from Eating Disorders Victoria, bulimia nervosa is a serious psychiatric illness characterized by recurrent binge eating episodes, the consumption of abnormally large amounts of food in a short period of time, followed by self-induced vomiting, fasting, overexercising, and or the misuse of laxatives, enemas, or diuretics.
Okay, thank you so much for clarifying and using those two definitions. I know there's so much confusion out there on what bulimia actually is.
I think it's important to not to get caught up in, you know, your diagnosis or your label, and really just to focus on, you know, how you can improve, how you can take the next step in eating disorder recovery instead of thinking that you have this label for life now, right? Because full recovery is possible. And I know in my recovery, it wasn't really helpful to continuously label myself as someone who was bulimic, right?
That's so true. I think the label can misguide people anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Can you explain a little bit about the damage that bulimia can do to the body?
Yeah, definitely. I think when we think about bulimia, we think, oh, you know, throat, it's bad for the teeth, right? Bad for mouth. But bulimia really can affect every single part of the body, especially the heart, right? Because the heart is dependent on electrolytes. And so when the body is malnourished or dehydrated, like it can be with someone with bulimia, we can experience heart palpitations, irregular rhythms. And I remember before starting treatment for my eating disorder for bulimia, I needed to see a cardiologist for an EKG and a heart ultrasound. And like I said, there's so many other parts of the body that bulimia can affect. Hair loss is one of them. I know that's something I experienced in my eating disorder. And when the body lacks protein for new hair growth, that's what happens. And of course, you can experience acne due to dehydration and lack of nutrition, which causes dry skin. So bulimia really does affect every single part of the body.
Wow. Yeah. It brings me back, because I experienced so much of those physical symptoms too. And it's sad because without the right education, you might not necessarily know that all of these are rooted in bulimia. So what was your personal experience with bulimia?
Mm-hmm. Well, I struggled all throughout adolescence and college with bulimia. I think like many, my eating disorder kind of shifted and changed throughout the years, depending where I was in life, depending what was going on. I know when I got into my college years, things were a lot more stressful between classes and a new environment. So my eating disorder definitely, I think, kicked up a notch during that time period. And that was also the time that I got help when I entered college. That's when I really started taking my eating disorder recovery more seriously. But it was a long road, I won't lie. It wasn't like I realized what was going on. I immediately seeked help, and right then and there, you know, I wanted the help and I wanted to recover. I had to go through a long journey of figuring out, like, what does full recovery look like? Do I want it? You know, how do I get there if I do want it? And eventually, obviously, given where I am now, I decided that I did want to pursue full recovery. And I think my recovery was maybe different than a lot of people listening, in that I didn't always follow the classic eating disorder recovery model. I did a lot of alternative healing methods as well, like meditation, like really engaging in my spirituality and incorporating that into my recovery process.
I love that. I know that's a big part of you as a person now and your own coaching practice. So that's pretty amazing.
Thank you.
Did you feel shame with this purging behavior, right? Like, I remember going through my bulimia experience. And first of all, I wasn't, like, my first stage was denial. Like, I'm not bulimic. That's just not me. I didn't want to put myself in the category, even though all the signs pointed to it, right? I'm engaging in behaviors. And I know that was partially full of shame, right? Like, even being able to admit, like, this is what I'm doing to my body all the time.
Right. I think there is so much shame, so much secrecy surrounding bulimia. I mean, I felt like it was so hard just to get those words out of my mouth, bulimia, purging, you know? And I thought, how could I ever tell someone that I do this? How could I ever get help for this? I feel so embarrassed. I'm so mad at myself that I let it get this out of control. And I think there is a stigma around this, right? We don't talk about it enough, even though I think it happens. You know, people have bulimia. Millions of people around the world have bulimia. So it's crazy that we don't talk about this enough and that there's still so much shame surrounding it.
Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you. I feel like there's always someone when I bring up having bulimia, someone's like, you know, I kind of struggled with that too. Or
yes, yes.
People are willing to say, oh, I have an eating disorder, but they're not quite as willing to go as far as saying they had bulimia because it's a little bit more vulnerable because it's a pretty intense behavior, especially if you're purging. I remember when I was a kid going to health class and them explaining what bulimia is. And they were showing videos of this girl who was, you know, using purging as a behavior. And they were getting really specific in this video about like how she did it and what she did about it. And I remember being like, this is so out there. I would never become this person. Mm-hmm. And then just like a few years later, that was the way my eating disorder went. And I just was judging myself so hard. And I relate to your comment and sentiment of being mad at yourself for letting it go so far and being super embarrassed about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, that sounds like an incredibly triggering video to watch in a health class. I think there's maybe a different way they could have explained what bulimia is without a literal video. But at the same time, at least they did explain what bulimia is and that it's a very real thing that millions of people around the world struggle with every single day.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that video now. Like, I was going to explain what I saw in the video, and I was like, that's not safe for me to say on this.
Yeah, maybe save that one.
But they showed it to our entire middle school class. So there's that. But for you, you know, I'm really curious. I know you struggled for several years. I know you mentioned there was a moment where you really decided to heal. But did you have any pivotal moments when it came to healing your bulimia that you wanted to share with the audience today?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I had this like light bulb moment where all of a sudden everything clicked and I was like, I want recovery. I want to do things differently. I think it was kind of waking up feeling exhausted every day in this process. And eventually I just got to this point where I was like, I don't want to live like this anymore. I don't want to be tired all the time. I want to live my life. I want to thrive. I don't just want to exist every day. And so I started, you know, choosing new methods of healing. I started a meditation practice. I started incorporating visualization into my life. I made a vision board. And so it wasn't like I started doing all of these things at once either. It was more of like a slow fade into recovery, I always say. And so along the way, I kept picking up new things that I could add to my recovery process. So to answer your question, there wasn't some crazy pivotal moment where everything changed for me, but rather this this waking up and realizing like, hey, I want to do something different. I want to feel good every day when I wake up and going from there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So how did you incorporate meditation as a tool to help your bulimia?
Mm-hmm. Well, I started slow. I didn't say like, okay, all of a sudden I'm going to start meditating 30 minutes a day, eyes closed, you know, totally silent, loving it. That would have never worked for me. And I still don't do any kind of silent meditation. I love guided meditation. So I started slow. You know, I would take 5 minutes to meditate, you know, and then maybe the next day 10, and then maybe go back to 5. I really just did whatever worked for me in the moment. And I didn't say, I have to do this every night, I have to do this every morning. It was really like, when I have time, I'll do it. And it was such a better way to think about incorporating this practice into my life, especially with black and white thinking. It was way easier to like live in the gray area a little bit and say, I'll do this when I have time. I'll do this if I have 5 minutes or if I have 10 minutes. I'll just see what works for me that day.
Yeah, I love that. You know, you were kind of mentioning healing, and I do want to talk about the thought, feeling, urge, action chain, because I feel like you are completely correct in recovery is usually, I like the slow fade, like you're saying, it's like a fade into recovery. That's such a good image. It's like you eventually build up the motivation and the encouragement by doing the things. But I feel like for me, a real pivotal moment was when the whole thought, feeling, urge, action chain became evident to me in my head. I did not have the awareness of what this was as a concept. Mm-hmm. But I remember recognizing, you know, I'm feeling this thing, and then I have, like, I'm feeling this emotion, and then I have an urge, and then I end up using a behavior, right? Mm-hmm. I remember analyzing this and then recognizing, you know, the power of surfing the urge.
Right.
With bulimia. And that's where I really felt that, like, pivotal moment, although it was probably, it felt really big to me, the ability to sit with the discomfort of the urge and not do the action. So when I got experience of not purging, I started to heal, right? It was like when I took, I could choose the old pattern or the new pattern. And taking the new pattern was really how I felt purging began to become less appealing. Mm-hmm. But I'm really curious if you could explain a little bit about what the thought, feeling, urge, mm-hmm. action chain is and kind of how it applies.
Well, the thought, feeling, urge, action chain is exactly how it sounds, right? It's this chain. And repetitive negative thoughts lead to negative feelings like guilt, shame, sadness, anger. And when we ruminate on our negative thoughts, you know, and feelings, we get an urge. And that urge is to use an unhealthy eating disorder behavior like purging, right? And so you lay it out really clearly, right? This is the thought. This is the feeling. This is the urge. And then this is the action. And so this is where surfing the urge comes in, exactly like you said, where we use a coping skill to ride that wave instead of acting on the urge. And this is where we can get creative as coaches, you know, coming up with healthy coping skills for our clients to use while they're surfing the urge. And obviously, as we just talked about, one of my personal favorite coping skills is meditation, visualization, but that doesn't work for a lot of people. And that's great. There's so many other wonderful coping skills, you know, like painting, like reading. So I hope I explained that well, but it really is very basic to understand. And this can be something super helpful in recovery to writing down, you know, like taking a sheet of paper and writing down an example of a negative thought you had, and then going down that chain. Okay, I have this negative thought, and then I have this feeling, right? And going down, writing it down like that.
Mm-hmm. I think that can be so eye-opening, right? Just to be able to write it down, because you start to notice your own patterns. Like when you mm-hmm. do write this down, like you could even start with, I would say before the thought is like, what circumstance triggered the thought, right? Like could go even earlier is like, what in the environment made me think this thought?
Right, right.
And then you can work on maybe changing the environment so you're not so easily triggered by that. But there's so many areas where this thought, feeling, urge, action chain can almost be interrupted so that you don't make it all the way down the chain.
Right, absolutely.
So, I guess in general, if someone wants to end their bulimic behavior, what are the steps that you recommend they take? And I know there is no one-size-fits-all model for healing in probably any way, but I'd love to hear some general tips or steps that someone could use to get their healing moving forward.
Hey, Full and Thriving fam. I wanted to let you in on something super exciting. We're welcoming new members inside the Recovery Collective for a limited time between September 20th and October 1st. Be sure to mark your calendars and go to recoverycollective.mykajabi.com to get on the wait list. Curious to know what it's like inside? Here's what our current members are saying.
My favorite part about the Recovery Collective is that as of joining about a year ago, I finally realized how important it is to have a community in recovery.
It was definitely a turning point for me to finally talk to someone who's understanding.
The people in the Recovery Collective are some of the most lovely, supportive people I've ever met.
If you're thinking about joining the Recovery Collective, I have two words to say to you. Do it. Literally just give it a chance. I think you will be surprised in the most wonderful way.
Make the jump and join. It's honestly one of the best things I ever did, and I've made some of my best friends from around the world
It's a safe place for me. I know I can say anything and never get judged for it. And I feel that we all truly care about each other.
Well, there you have it. Our members have spoken. And I might be a little biased, but I think our community is pretty great too. For more information, check out the link in the show notes and make sure you sign up for the waiting list so you can be the first to join our community
between September 20th and October 1st.
Right. Well, I think the first step would be, you know, call a local therapist and make sure this therapist is someone that's specialized in eating disorders. So that they really, you know, have a grasp on what's going on, what you're experiencing. So I think that's the first step, you know, talk to a therapist and have some different consultation calls. Figure out who you might get along best with, right? Because in your therapy sessions, you'll be getting vulnerable. You'll be opening up and you want to make sure that you're opening up to someone, you know, you feel safe and comfortable around. And then typically, because with eating disorders, it's about the food. So you'll bring a registered dietitian, you know, again, specialized in eating disorders onto the team. And coaching is an adjunct, right? So it's not something that has to be a part of the treatment team. But if it's financially accessible for you, that would be another great added benefit to your recovery, would be being able to work with a coach as well.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Definitely forming that outpatient team is so, so important. I think that's such a brave step. If someone has that outpatient team intact, is there anything else you recommend someone can work on to heal their bulimic behavior? Like any other steps you recommend?
Well, if you have an outpatient team and you've not been recommended higher level of care, right? If you're really working with your outpatient providers and you want to do something additional in your recovery, I think finding the healthy coping skills that really work for you is a great next step. I mean, figure out what it is that makes you feel good. Does meditation make you feel good? Does visualization work for you? Is there something artistic that you can engage in every day, right? So I think finding the healthy coping skills that work for you is definitely necessary in eating disorder recovery. Something, I'll change my tune a little bit, something a little different. My partner, Sarah Lee, and I, we created this website called The Purge Pledge. And The Purge Pledge is essentially pledging not to purge. And so it's a website where you can go and you can take this pledge and you'll get a downloaded printout that you can print out and put on your nightstand to remind you of this pledge that you took. And that might be another step that you take to say, hey, I don't want this to be part of my life anymore. I'm going to take this pledge and I'm going to promise to myself that I won't do this. And I'm going to try hard every single day to keep my pledge, to keep my promise.
I find that to be really powerful. I love the idea of committing to yourself and making that commitment. You know, I do think it's probably really hard to go cold turkey.
Yeah.
But it might not be necessarily a cold turkey thing. It's like just pledging you're going to do your absolute best to not purge, you know, and keep healing and working on recovery in the right direction.
Absolutely. I certainly didn't go cold turkey. It takes a long time to decrease these behaviors and stop these behaviors. And so maybe taking this pledge, maybe what it really means to you is exactly like you said, I'll try my hardest every single day. I'll remember that I've made this promise to myself. I'll remember my vow. And maybe that will help bring more intention into the actions that you take every day.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. I find with all of these behaviors and eating disorder recovery, it's important to remember, like, it is possible to do cold turkey. Like, that pledge could be the thing that makes you stop doing the behavior. But the
I hope so.
Yeah. But, you want to keep doing the underlying work. Right? You want to keep making sure you understand your emotions and feelings around stopping this behavior and processing and coping with everything that comes up when you're choosing to do something different instead of the behavior itself.
Right.
So as a coach, this is a question I'm curious about. When someone comes to you with bulimia, what are some of the tasks you put them to.
Yeah. Well, as a coach, I'm focused on behavior change, right? So right when I start working with someone, I want to help them change their behaviors. I want to go through that thought, feeling, urge, action chain and see why are the behaviors coming up? When are they coming up? And how can I help you with that? And so typically we'll think about two or three things they can commit to doing before binging and purging, right? And I'll always say, you know, one of those things is going to be to text me. Text me when you have the urge. And if you forget, or if it doesn't seem possible in that moment, text me right after so that we can still have a conversation, so that we can still talk about it. I know that when you don't talk about it in the moment, sometimes it's like a blur looking back on that time where you binged and purged, even if it was just 5 days ago, right? So I will always ask a client to, you know, start texting me when you get that urge. And then we can go from there and thinking about like, okay, what's coming up during that time? What led to that urge? What can we do to fight that urge? What can we do to surf the urge in those moments where you're really struggling?
So it's like a game plan. So what you do.
Yeah, a game plan.
Yeah, you go through the thought, feeling, urge, action chain. And I'm sure you learn so much about that individual as a whole just by doing that a few times. And then being able to come up with a game plan to surf the urge differently. And I love the suggestion of texting. That's something I always offer to my clients as well. And I find that sometimes the texting itself helps externalize the emotions, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think a huge reason why people fall into the bulimia trap is because there's something not being expressed.
Right. It's so shameful, right? You feel embarrassed in that moment. And a lot of time that prevents you from reaching out to someone. You know, friends don't understand. It's hard to text your parents in that moment, right? I mean, you can't always text your therapist, right? And so coaches, it's really awesome to be able to have someone text us in that moment when that urge is coming up so that we can talk about it right then and there, and that they can have someone that they feel safe reaching out to, that they know gets it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that. I think it's so helpful. And it's very true. Like, I hear this all the time. People are like, why would I get a therapist or why would I get a coach? I have my best friends for that. And I just have to say, like, that's not really an appropriate use of best friends. Like, maybe you can reach out to them once in a while when you're struggling. But, you know, you do want to have healthy boundaries with those people in your personal life as well. And I know you're not going to be wanting to texting them every time you feel an urge, because there is so much embarrassment and shame there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, your best friend, as awesome as he, she, they is, they aren't trained in what to say and how to help you in that moment.
Yes, such a good point. Absolutely. That is, it's so true. Like, this is why I think reaching out to a trained professional is a huge part of this healing process, because the professional is going to be aware of, you know, what to say, what not to say, which the world is typically not versed on.
Right. And best friends, as awesome as they are, can be triggering, you know, without meaning to be.
Oh, 100%. That's so true. But anyway, so you're mentioning, you know, this thought, feeling, urge, action chain. And, you know, I'm curious, why is it so important for folks with bulimia to feel their feelings and learn how to cope in healthier ways?
Well, I think this is the same answer for everyone, not just people with bulimia. We have to feel our feelings. We're humans. We're not robots. When we don't allow ourselves to feel our feelings or to express ourselves, I think our feelings, they get trapped in our body, right? And they have to come out somehow.
You know, it's funny because that's, I feel like, the crux of what my bulimia was. It was like I had so many feelings and I was kind of, I felt like I had to be happy all the time. Mm-hmm. So because of that, all of the negative emotions weren't being expressed. And I think I leaned on bulimia to release those negative emotions on a very unconscious level.
Right. I so relate to what you just said. I mean, I remember having so much anxiety in my eating disorder and not allowing myself to feel my feelings, not allowing myself to use any other coping skills. I just kept it so trapped in my body. And then for me, purging was like a relief.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that's exactly what it was. And I never put the word to it when I was in that moment. I didn't realize I was seeking relief, but it really was. It was this way to take the pressure off, like the pressure to be thin, the pressure to be happy all the time. It was just like this release of energy, as you're saying, physical way to express myself, because I didn't know how to express those negative emotions like anger, shame, guilt, embarrassment, anxiety. So feeling those feelings is really a major step to being able to release that energy,
right?
Instead of turning to the behavior. That's how I've always seen it.
And for me, meditation gives me a chance to feel my feelings. It gives me a chance to just breathe and take a step back from my busy life and think about my thoughts, think about what I'm thinking about all the time. And it gives me a chance to feel my feelings and really express myself.
Yes, I think meditation is such a good way to do that. I find for me, like as an adult with coping skills now, I would say what I do is journaling. I am like such a good little journaler when I'm feeling some anxiety come up. I just whip out the journal and write about whatever's on my mind and express myself. And that outlet does provide relief, right? And it's a healthier way to feel some relief. Of course, coping skills aren't going to give you maybe a high that you once felt that your eating disorder gave you, and they're not going to numb you, which is another reason why people use eating disorder behaviors. But they are going to make those feelings 10% more tolerable, 20% more tolerable, so you don't use the behavior.
And we don't want to be numb. We as humans have a complex range of emotions, right? And so being human, we need to experience all of these different emotions. And when you're numb to all the great emotions too.
Yeah, that's so true. Like, it's not fun to go through life numb. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's so many people maybe on an unconscious level enjoy being numb from the negative emotions. But we have to remember, you can't really selectively numb like the positive. You know, you can't just like feel all the positive and not and like numb out the negative. Everything is numbed out.
Right. Because that's not really living.
Yeah. Life is about negative and positive emotion. And there's a life coach out there who I'm a fan of who says, you know, don't expect to be happy 100% of the time. It's more about that 50-50. Like, if you look at the emotion wheel, I don't know if you've seen the emotion wheel, that tool.
Oh, yeah.
That I use that all the time with my clients. And the majority of the emotions on the emotion wheel, more than half, are negative. Like, they'd be classified as uncomfortable emotions, right? So that's eye-opening. It's like we're taught we should only be feeling these feelings, like happiness, joy, peace. And then we feel shame around so many more emotions where that spectrum, it's actually mostly feelings that are difficult to feel because that is the human experience.
And I think in recovery, we learned that we don't have to be numb to the negative emotions. We can feel them and we can release them, right? Mm-hmm. We can feel them and we can still be okay.
Yes, we can feel them and they're teaching us something. They're here to teach us something. They're here to provide insight into our own lives and into who we are, into the parts of ourselves that need to be, you know, need to be healed. So I'm completely right there with you. That's one of the gifts of recovery, is truly being able to feel those feelings.
Right, right.
I love that. So what would you say is the most difficult part for folks who want to conquer bulimia?
Well, I think the most challenging part is figuring out, how do I stop the behavior?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I mean, once you get in the routine, once you get in this toxic eating disorder behavior cycle, it is really hard to break that cycle. It is really hard to get out of it. So I know that's kind of a broad answer, but I think stopping the behavior is the hardest part.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the resistances to stopping? Like, what are the walls that people are running to that makes it so hard?
Well, I think it's become the coping skill, right? Binging and purging has become the number one coping skill. And it's uncomfortable when we interrupt that behavior and use a different coping skill. we think, oh, this is so uncomfortable. I'm not going to be able to tolerate this. I just need to go back to my eating disorder behavior. But you really have to sit in that discomfort in order to get to full recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a huge piece of it too, is sitting in that discomfort of stopping, right? That's what makes the stopping so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Is sitting in that discomfort and choosing another path.
And it's asking yourself, you know, in this discomfort, what's coming up for me right now? What am I so afraid of?
That's such a good question. It's a good reflective question to journal about if you have a moment, right? Because I always like to think our eating disorders, they can feel so intense, intimidating, scary. But when you strip it all away, it's really just a part of you that's really scared and full
Absolutely.
Of fear. And
yeah.
It's like, or like the Great Wizard of Oz, it's like you have this big, green, ghostly, scary eating disorder. And then there's this little old man behind the curtain. And it's like kind of what an eating disorder is.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Okay, so what do you think listeners can do today to start their healing journey?
I think if you already have a really awesome outpatient team and you have the right professionals on board, people that you love working with, and you're really just looking for something extra that you can add to your recovery process, I say, let's add a vision board. Let's get really clear on what you want to bring into your life. You know, what do you want your future to look like? And really think about it. You can mm-hmm. journal about it and spend a while really crafting that image in your mind. And then from there, go on to find pictures that evoke feelings that you want to feel in your recovered life.
I love that. That's such a fun little action that people can take today. I find that constantly bringing that vision into the forefront of your mind is so helpful in recovery, especially if you're feeling completely stuck, is to just bring back that vision in. And I think a vision board's a really fun way to focus energy on that, right?
Yeah. And I think take the pledge and maybe stick the printout of the pledge on your vision board too. That will be another great reminder of this vow. So that's a great idea.
I love that idea. I love all those ideas, but now I'm imagining a bunch of listeners taking the pledge and then printing it out, which I didn't know you guys offered that, but printing it out and then putting that in the middle of your vision board as a reminder, like, I'm doing this so that I can access these parts of my life that I'm inspired about or motivated about and hopeful for. So I think that's such a fun little task people can do to focus on healing today.
Yes. It's www.purgepledge.com. There's no the in there. So
okay.
I want to clarify.
We will put it in the show notes so people can go check that out. And you also have this course that just came out called Conquering Bulimia. Do you want to share a little bit about that with the community?
So my partner, Sarah Lee, and I, she's another CCI certified coach. We launched this online course and it's called Conquering Bulimia. And obviously it aims to help folks conquer bulimia. And we launched this online course for many reasons. But one thing that we thought was missing from the recovery world was something that you could do in the privacy of your home. Something that you could log on and do if you have 15 minutes spare time, you know, maybe 30 minutes spare time one day. But you get lifetime access. There's no time limit. It's really just something that you can do when you have the extra time. You know, maybe it's part of your recovery homework if you're working with an outpatient team. Or maybe you haven't taken the step towards recovery yet and you really just need a kickstart. Or maybe you've been on the path of recovery for a long time and you need kind of a refresh, a reset. So this course is for many different types of people, but we really saw that something like this was missing from the recovery world.
That's amazing. I don't think there are any courses out there in recovery at the moment that I'm aware of, besides like training coaches and training professionals. But I love that this is accessible to people who are trying to heal, you know, with their own journey. And it's a very resourceful move, I think, to bring a course into your healing plan.
Right. And I mean, especially there's nothing like this out there for bulimia specifically, right? And because bulimia carries so much shame and secrecy, we thought this was the perfect option, something that you can really do in the comfort of your home, in private.
That makes so much sense. I assume it's definitely meant to be used in conjunction with the team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This course is not a replacement for professional talk therapy, for, you know, nutrition therapy. It's something that you can do in conjunction to your recovery process.
Very good. I love it. Well, Merit, this has been wonderful. I'm so grateful to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here. And I hope you have a beautiful day.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's always wonderful talking to you.
All right. That concludes this week's episode of the Full and Thriving Podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of the show. When you have a moment, please head on over to Instagram and follow my recovery coaching account at Meg_McCabe to stay up to date on everything I'm doing in recovery land. And if you're feeling extra inspired, please send me a direct message to let me know how this podcast has impacted your life. I'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.